Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. Nearly 100 years ago, the novelist Rebecca West wrote the following quote, "I myself have never been able to find out precisely what feminism is. I only know that people call me a feminist whenever I express sentiments that differentiate me from a doormat." I love that. The 21st century woman is confused. In some regards, women are expected to be sensitive, submissive, and feminine. Yet in other ways, as in their professional careers, they're expected to be assertive and independent. Women's role models for what is traditionally considered feminine are vast. Femininity has been born into us and bred into our genes for thousands of years. Our role models for assertiveness and independence, however, have largely been male-represented and counterintuitive to our dyed-in-the-wool instincts. But women are not men and should not have to act like them. Women bring an entirely new dimension to the business world that has yet to be clearly defined. As it stands today, it is common for businesswomen to find themselves with the dilemma of speaking up or shutting up, fearing the reaction their assertiveness may generate. They walk a fine line in terms of earning the respect of their colleagues. Assertive women are commonly labeled in derogatory ways by both men and women. Another problem is that women are expected to play many contradicting roles that men don't have to play. The proverbial bring home the bacon and fry it up in the pan. At home, they are expected to be domestic nurturers to their husbands and children. But that gets them nowhere in the business world. What is exceptional about women is that they can fulfill these roles and fulfill them well, something that men cannot do. Women can do it all, and it is time that they are respected for their amazing plethora of abilities. My special guest today, transformational coach Lisa Marie Jenkins, author of the book Wake Up Beauty, It's Not About the Prince, says that women naturally balanced between the masculine and feminine, have the ability to both take action from a linear and analytical perspective and also be intuitive and compassionate. She believes that women will have to step up with courage and confidence to invoke the divine feminine in order to help and transform the world. Lisa Marie Jenkins is a keynote speaker and the founder of Igniting Brilliance Through Feminine Leadership, a consulting company providing professional businesswomen mentoring, personal and professional development, and peer group interaction to support each other in becoming authentic and powerful women in order to help heal and transform the way we all work, lead, and live. Prior to owning her own company, she spent over 20 years in senior sales and marketing roles at Fortune 500 high-tech companies and was recognized as one of the 200 most influential women in her industry. What is so remarkable about that is that she started out with a physical education degree. I'll let Lisa explain that transition, but so let's bring her on. Let's now give a warm welcome to my special guest, Lisa Marie Jenkins. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning, Randy. Thank you so much for that gracious introduction.
You're welcome. So what did you want to tell us to start off with about the 21st century woman?
Well, as you were introducing the 21st century woman and talking about feminism and the shifts that are happening with women, there were probably 20 points that you hit on that we could have an entire hour conversation on. and I think what I'll start with is that, you know, we're in a time of evolution where women have to step up and evolve our species, because we've been in this purely masculine. And when I say masculine, I want to set this preference, whatever. Whenever I say masculine or feminine, I don't mean men versus women ever, because we all have a masculine and feminine side. And the whole point is that we all find our balance. So it has nothing to do with sexual orientation. It has nothing to do with whether we dress masculine or feminine. It has everything to do with the yin and the yang, if you want to call it that, right? And we've been in a place where our world has been driven by very masculine power. We've been way out of balance for a while. We needed it. It got us bridges and technology, but we're out of balance. We're being driven from a purely analytical, logical, competitive, take action for the sake of taking action from a place of the ego. And the feminine is more of the collaborative, the empathetic, the compassionate, the intuitive, the caring about the greater good, the creativity. And so when you take inspired action, meaning from the feminine, and you bring it forth using the masculine, then we're in balance. And we're in a place, like you said, a woman's role is, there's a fine line there. It's almost like there's a very narrow channel that we can walk through as women today. So because if you're anything but nice first, you get labeled as aggressive or a bitch or something negative, right? So anytime a woman really steps out there and puts herself in the spotlight, she gets a lot of criticism. So if you think of any woman of magnitude that's put herself out there, she gets criticized. But then if she's not proving competence enough, then she's considered too soft or not competent or not intelligent, things like that. So for a woman, and you know, there's a great study that was actually pointed out in Sheryl Sandberg's book Lean In, and I love this, and I'd love to show a little video clip if you can Google it on YouTube and find it. It's Oprah interviewing Sheryl Sandberg, and they're talking about a Harvard Business Review case study that was done on a woman named Heidi Rosen. This is a fascinating story to me. This was very recent. So Heidi Rosen was a Silicon Valley capital venture startup, and this woman killed it. Like, she, so much so, right, that Harvard did a business case on her. And then a professor for his MBA students at Columbia University took his class, and he divided them in half, and there were men and women in both groups. And he took the case study, and he gave the original case study to one group, and he took the other case study, and he only changed one thing in it, and he changed the name from Heidi to Howard. And gave the case studies. Then he pulled them. He had survey questions for them. Like, they got together as a group and discussed it, and they answered the survey questions. So when they came back, this is just absolutely amazing to me, Randy, they revered Howard. Howard, what a great – first of all, they found him equally competent, which maybe back in the 1950s they wouldn't even found them equally competent, even when the credentials are in black and white and there's facts. But they revered Howard. They loved Howard. What a great guy. Totally trust him. Loved to work for the man. Heidi, not so much. Heidi, don't trust her. She's out for herself. Certainly wouldn't want to work for her. So how is it that we have this unconscious bias that when a woman does things in a very assertive, very linear way and is successful, somehow she gets labeled negative because she's not nice first. So I think that's
right.
That's where we
I
are
think
right
that's,
now.
That's
in the
a
world.
That's huge. I definitely agree that that's a really telling study. You know, as you were talking and saying, you know, how women are the more analytical and the creative, and that's kind of what we're going into as the world is changing, I started to think about, you know, the conversations that I've had with women. And most women are so, they're so aware, conscious, spiritual, open to change and ready to improve and things like that. And I hear that most of their husbands are like, huh?
Yeah. Well,
so it really is the women that are rising up. It really is.
Right. We're leading the way, and we have to. And so, you know, it's men are in a tough place right now. It's their roles have not really, they can't play their old role comfortably, but their new roles haven't been fully defined, so to speak. So you think about, you go back, a man was your protector, the provider. He was first. He was on top in every way, right? The woman was, she took care of everybody else. And that's the one thing women, that old conditioning, I mean, it gets carried through, you know, your conditioning, your upbringing, society. It's carried through DNA and lineage, that we have to be others focused and we take care of everybody else and not ourselves. And that's one of the things that's happening with women as they rise up and become more competent in business and take on very independent roles in their lives and are financially successful and, you know, success in any way you can want to define that. They haven't let go of doing it all for everybody else. So women are having a hard time managing their energy because they haven't, because they've been conditioned to believe it's selfish if they think of themselves first, right? But men, if you think of men right now, it's to them either this whole women's movement. I mean, no one can deny it's happening because every time you turn around, there's another women's conference. There's another women's organization. There's some article. I can find a dozen articles every single day by searching on Google about women leading the way in business and how companies are more profitable the more diversity they have on their boards and in the C-suite, et cetera, et cetera. So it's happening, and you can't deny it, but there's still this huge differential. And then, you know, if women are 50% of the workforce, they earn 60 to 65% of all degrees. That's bachelor's and graduate degrees. Yet we still overall in leadership roles, meaning elected officials and the C-suite and boards, et cetera, we represent about 14%. So there's still a huge imparity there. And I think So the men are either apathetic about what's happening or they're threatened by it and they're not sure what to do with it. So we've got to stop, you know, having all these women's conferences and women's, lean-in groups and all these things without including the men. The men, we can't do it in a vacuum. We need the men to come along with it. And I think as women start stepping in their true role, then we free men up to start doing their own personal development and their own spiritual work and their own finding their own balance between the masculine and feminine. Because they've been, you know, up until now, I mean, my son is 21. He's probably one of the first generations that's been raised where he's been allowed to explore his more sensitive side, his feelings, his emotions, that it's, you know, that old saying of, big boys don't cry, you know, showing emotion, showing weak, you know, that's a sign of weakness. Showing vulnerability is a sign of weakness. And, you know, my father, basically, I would say my father died of a heart attack because he was so restrained and he was such a sensitive man, though a very masculine man, but he was so sensitive and was not able or knew how to express and move through emotions and feelings.
Right.
So
I know that,
like,
you know, with my own husband, you know, if I know something's up and I ask him how he feels, he's like a deer in the headlights. I'm feeling something. He does not have any idea what he's feeling. It's very, very sad. You know, in your book, you talk about leaning in. What do you mean when you say leaning in?
So I took that from, you know, Sheryl Sandberg's book, Lean In, and I love that, you know, she's not the average woman in business by any means. She came from well. She's the CEO of Facebook, but what I do love about her is she's somebody of stature and magnitude, and that she's bringing so much awareness and attention to women needing to lean in. But I have a little saying that don't just lean. So her whole lean in thing is about lean in, take your seat at the table, lean in, speak up, use your voice as a woman, your authentic voice. But I say don't just lean in, find your seat at the table and speak up and speak your truth, but lead us out of this old way. Take us out, you know, let's go through this paradigm shift of doing it this old masculine way where we incorporate the whole person. So I do women's leadership forums, and it's all around coaching and peer mentoring, and then we have professionally facilitated. And with that, it's about leaning in but doing it authentically as a woman so that we are not – the bottom line can no longer be solely profit in any organization. It has to be how are you contributing to the greater good of your community, of society, to the world, how you are helping sustainability. So millennials are awesome at that. Millennials get that. They're all about creating positive impact. The why of why you're in business can no longer, it has to be about service. It can no longer just be about profit. And women get that. And women do that naturally.
Right.
Because we're communal.
Right. That is very true. And you say that women have been falling asleep on ourselves. And when you say that, what do you mean?
So the whole title of my book comes from that. It was a woman I worked with years ago, and I was doing a counseling session with her, and I was going through a breakup, and she was sort of supporting me and guiding me, and she said, and I don't remember what sparked her to say this, but she kind of chuckled, and she goes, "Oh, honey, don't you know the biggest, fattest lie we've ever been told as young girls is that when Prince Charming kissed Sleeping Beauty, she didn't wake up." Oh, no, no, no. She did not wake up. She went to sleep. She went to sleep on herself and her own passion and her own purpose and her own worth because she believed romantic love was meant to provide that to her. So that's the whole idea of women, because we're so others-focused, women go to sleep on themselves and their own needs and their own passion and their own worth and managing their own energy and caring for themselves, right? It goes back to the put the on an airplane, right? What are the instructions from the flight attendants? Put the oxygen mask on yourself before attempting to help others or small children. Now, for
right.
mothers, that's for many mothers still look at me cross-eyed at that, and it's like, no, you absolutely cannot take care of anybody until you've taken care of yourself and you're filling your own cup. You have nothing left to give out. I mean, you can do it for a while, and then eventually you'll end up ill or empty and. So that's kind of, women go to sleep. I think we've been conditioned. I mean, Randy, if you think about for a millennial, women have been second-class citizens. They've been beaten. They've been brutalized. They've not had the right to have legal representation, to vote, to own land. So, you know, if you think about, and we still have sex trafficking going on today, and it's huge. Mm-hmm. It's huge right here in Florida. But it has
right.
not been safe for women to speak for themselves, to defend themselves. I mean, literally physically safe for a woman to stand up. So even though here today in North America, by all means, women are empowered, we have equality, but there's sort of this underlying, we're meant to be, you know, there's a conditioning, there's an underlying fear, there's almost like we carry it somewhat through cellular memory, that
mm-hmm.
it's not okay to speak up for ourselves or to be
right.
heard. And
right.
women almost can have, they don't want to take up too much space in a room. They almost want to apologize for their presence, or they're afraid to say something if it's not about conforming or going with the norm. And I'll tell you something that was a big eye-opener that I learned many years ago at Cisco when I worked there. I worked with a lot of engineers, and like you said, I'm a phys ed major. I was not an engineer. I was not groomed to be in business, but I did that because the reason I was successful and I accomplished what I did is because I just went through any door. I didn't just go through it. I ran through any door that opened for me, and I focused on what I could bring and didn't focus on where I lack. And women have a tendency
okay.
to focus on where they lack, not what
True.
They already bring. And so
Absolutely.
It's sort of a hiding strategy. Well, I need more degrees. I need to learn this first. This before that. I need to do more planning. Mm-hmm. I need to make it perfect before I put it out there. But what I learned was, when I was sitting in a room in a very male-dominated industry, both in the field and sales and in engineering still today, as you're hearing such a huge push for women in tech, but these are brilliant people, people that have master's degrees from MIT and Harvard and Stanford and Berkeley, and so very intellect, very high intellect, very left brain, not a lot of emotional intelligence, though. And I would want to share an idea or a thought or a direction, and I knew it went against the norm in that culture or the norm of how they thought or how they approach things. And so I learned that whenever I had something to share and it brought up fear for me to share it, and it gave me an adrenaline rush from the bottom of my gut, and I could see my hands sort of shaking. I learned that when that happened to me, that was absolutely when I had to push through and I had to speak up and I had to say it. And that's where I believe most women stop. They stifle their voice, because it's the fear that comes up. And when you can start looking at that type of fear as almost a compass of go there, that's the direction you need to go.
I definitely see that in my own life. I definitely do, yeah. When I'm afraid of something, I've got to push through it because I don't want anything holding me back. I don't need fear to hold me back. And it's interesting, you know, because you're such a powerful, outspoken woman, and you say that you struggled immensely from speaking up in romantic relationships. Why is that?
Oh, I was such a dichotomy. It was just, I look back now and I think I'm a different person today because I've healed all that. But the exact reason I was so powerful in the business world is the exact same reason why I was so powerless in the romantic relationship. So my father died when I was 8 years old, very unexpectedly, and I was the youngest and the only child still at home. My mother, they had been married 23 years, and my mother, of course, grieved as a wife would over any husband that she loved. But there was a whole other element to it, and that was my mother, I wasn't consciously aware of this at the time, but my mom really believed she somehow was not whole or good enough because she didn't have a partner. She didn't have a husband.
Okay.
Like somehow that made her less of a human being. And she was suicidal for, several months. And so what translated for me as an eight-year-old was, and I do remember distinctly feeling this and believing this was truth, is that we weren't as good as other people because we didn't have a dad.
Wow.
So I was paying, kids can adopt the most crazy beliefs and always make it about themselves somehow. So I was so painfully insecure through all of grade school and up until probably eighth grade, and I mean painfully, like pain inferiority complex where I was one of the kids that got bullied because it was so easy to pick on me and get me upset. And then, I started blossoming a little bit and I started getting a little positive attention for my looks. And then as a coping mechanism, whenever I felt inferior or insecure in any situation, I didn't know this, I was doing it consciously, but I was learning to act as if. So I started noticing people in the world that I saw as confident, powerful, successful, and I would just mimic I would emulate their body language, how they spoke, how they carried themselves. And before I knew it, that's kind of like that act as if, like I stepped into who I wanted to be. And so what happened is that worked for me in the business world. And that's how most men now, there's lots of studies now that show the competence and confidence difference in men and women. And if you'll remind me, I'll go back to it because there's a really, really interesting story that an HP study that they did internally on men versus women. So I'd love to share that. But what happened for me is that worked for me in business. I would just bite off more than I could chew. Didn't mean I didn't feel fear, but I would just trust I'd figure it out. I want this. I'm going for it. I got it. It's mine. But I was still very much that little girl that was not okay without a father that turned into I'm not okay without a partner, a boyfriend, a husband. So that was a desperateness. So, of course, I would seek partners that were desperate, right? As emotionally unavailable as I was to myself there, I was drawing partners that were emotionally unavailable to me. So
exactly.
And when I healed that, and this was the original intent of my book, and it transformed into a couple of things. But my original intent was that 15-year journey of when I got divorced at 34 and I woke up to the fact that I had this huge abandonment issue when it came to men, and that I would pick men beneath me so that they would never leave me, but I didn't love them or respect them either. When I started that journey, first it started more traditional therapy, and then it moved more into spiritual growth and different things. But it was a 15-year journey of some severe suffering when it came to the relationships I was in and trying to find my power. And when I finally really healed that, two things happened. Number one, it was like this all came together for me, and I was like, oh, my gosh, this is why I'm here. This is why I'm here. I'm here to help other women navigate this journey and combine, because I started seeing other really powerful women in the business world that were in really pathetic romantic relationships, like almost shocking. And I realized I wasn't the only one. So as I healed that, it's kind of like when your trauma meets your gifts and you heal that, that's when you really find your passion and your purpose in life. So I thought if I could help one woman navigate that with my greatest aha moments, than the 15 years of suffering it took me, then that would be my gift to the world.
Well, you know, you say something very poignant in your book. It's actually in the beginning of the book. I just mentioned this to you. But you say that the key is to upgrade your desire for a partner from a need to a preference. Turning a need into a preference immediately releases attachment to needing something outside of you in order to be okay. So that's basically what you were saying in a nutshell, right?
Yeah, because it was a need, you know, and it was because I was so needy and so desperate to have a romantic partner to feel okay, but, you know, that anytime we approach anything from a need and a desperateness, you know, it's universal law, A, we keep it away from us, right? It's like we literally create a block from it happening.
Right.
And so we can pull it in, and so that whatever you're searching for out yourself, you know, this is our society in America, right? Whether it's drugs, alcohol, sex, you know, more money, more power, bigger position or title, a relationship, right? It's the constant looking outside of yourself to fill what I call the God hole, right? You're finding that your true worth always comes from within. Your true passion and fulfillment always comes from within. And then the other thing, when you have that, the other things in your life just reflect that gently and come to you. That's what's pretty amazing. So yeah, I think I use an analogy of dinner, right? Like I'd really prefer to have sushi tonight for dinner, but if we have steak, I'm okay with that too, right? Like it's not
exactly
sushi. Yeah, it's as simple as that, but it's simple, not an easy transition to get there. Because look at people in the world that go from relationship to relationship to relationship that have been married multiple times. They keep thinking, when I find the right person, I'll finally be okay. When I make this much money, I'll be okay. When I lose my 20 pounds, I'll finally be happy. Right? It's that piece, that desperate search outside.
That's right.
And I think the romantic relationship just happens to be one of the biggest ones. It's for men too. A lot of men have the same issue, but women have it even more so because we still have a lot of that. You find your happiness, your holy grail, and your romantic partner. And what a burden for males. But then you also have the other side of it. Some males like that because if there's dysfunction and balance and you need me as a woman, then I'm the top dog and I'm in control. So I'm safer, right?
Yep, absolutely. I can definitely see that.
Yeah. I've had many men say to me, "Lisa, I can't even imagine being your partner because you wouldn't need me." And I'm like, "Well, desiring you and needing you are two different things."
That is so true. Yes, that's so true. This all has to change. You also talk about how our relationship to thought creates our life experience. And you said something that I really, really loved. You said, imagine teaching children how their relationship to thought creates their life experience. And I thought, my gosh, wouldn't that just change everything?
I know. It's, you know, when even you just saying that kind of like choked me up a little bit. Because it's so huge. It's so huge to teach mindfulness from the get-go. And fortunately, I have a daughter that's 24 that lives in New York City. And, I wish I had been further down my path. I mean, it is what it is, but when they were younger, and so I didn't. But as a young adult, I've been able to help her and support that. And she's getting lessons right now that I didn't get till I was in my 40s.
Yes,
because I'm teaching her relationship to her thought and that she creates her own stress and her own anxiety and her own upset by the thoughts that she allows herself to get caught up in and what she is putting out energetically. And it's like, it's so amazing to watch, to see her over the last 3 years and just, you know, coaching her a little bit as a friend and as a mother when she comes to me because she's upset or having a hard time. And seeing that shift in her is like, wow. Do you know how awesome this is? You're getting these lessons at 24 years old, and I was 45 before I even began to understand this.
I can relate so well because it took me, because of my childhood, it took me a really long time to get myself together. But I raised my children very different, and I have a daughter that's turning 30 next week and a son that's 23. But my daughter's always excelled. She just was the kind of person you could just drop her in anywhere, and she would have done well. My son was very small. He was picked on. He never really cared about school. It never really interested him, and he never really tried. But he was very smart in electronics and music and all kinds of things. So every time he would say to me, "I'm not very smart," I would say to him, "You are smart. You're very smart." And I would cite all these examples. Well, from 0 to 18, it didn't affect him. When he got to college, he started becoming smart and enjoying being smart. So all those years of putting that into him changed his whole feeling about himself. And now he's in medical school.
That's amazing.
It is absolutely amazing what we can do to our children to mess them up or to propel them into success. It's so amazing.
And the beauty of that is the earlier somebody learns it, the easier it is to transition because they haven't been doing this. It's not rutted thought patterns and behaviors, right? That's what I mean, mine were so hard, almost like I want to say hardwired. So when they start become like a rut in your brain of a thought pattern, it's harder to... It takes a way more conscious effort to undo that, right? Like, so if you've only been doing it a short time, it's easy to switch. That's why it's so cool seeing that happen with younger people. Oh, they just get it. It's like, wow, look at the shift in their life.
Right.
And I do sales presentation training or just presentation training called Find Your Voice, and it deals even if you think you're a pretty good presenter, it's still about how you can be totally on your game and be a really powerful presenter. And it all has to do, the core of it all goes back to optimal thought, optimal emotion, and a lot of the same kind of training you use with athletes before they perform or compete. You have to do the same thing for yourself when you get in front of a room of people, even if it's a boardroom or a large audience, and you speak. And, you know, that's like they say that's one of the number one fears is public speaking of people. And learning how to change your thoughts about that is the whole key to becoming a strong presenter. It's getting people out of that thought, because most people go into fear, right? They're like, I mean, people sweat, they have heart palpitations before they speak, they get stuck in their head, they totally forget what they're going to say, and it's all fear because of the thoughts they're telling themselves.
So absolutely.
It's cool to see that same, what we're talking about, that mindfulness and that optimal thought, optimal emotion. And see that applied when somebody, because you can see somebody transition in 2 days in a classroom setting that I do, where they go from total fear of standing in front of a group of people to they're in their mojo, right? They've got a little rhythm and they're getting comfortable and okay, I like presenting.
I'm kind of there. I'm kind of at that point where I'm getting ready to start doing that, and I have moments of fear, and then I say to myself, don't be afraid. Just do it, you know?
And I've had a lot of speaker training. When I was at Cisco, I went through some pretty intensive with a consultant in speaking, and I still have fear every time I get up, and that's normal. So I think there's two kind of speakers, those that say they don't have fear and those that are lying, right? It's just learning how to channel that fear into a positive and not let it psych you up, but use that adrenaline to psych you in. To it. And
right, adrenaline. That's what some people say. They say it's more of the adrenaline that if they didn't have it, they wouldn't be effective. Right.
Yeah, you just have to channel. But I'll tell you, even last year, it was a year ago this June, it was my first big keynote that I gave since I left corporate America. So I was speaking from my heart and my passion, not talking about technology. And I was at a women's conference, and it was about 220 women, and they were all middle managers and executives from all Silicon Valley high-tech companies. And right before I went on stage, there had been a women's power panel. So these were VPs from companies like Google and HP, Microsoft, those type of organizations. And these were amazing women, right? I mean, these are women that became VP level at Fortune 500 organizations in a male world. And they had some of them had great stories, right? Like just great accomplishments and great stories. And I went on right after them. And I started to go in a little panic, right? I'm like, because this is what women do. Who am I? Who am I to get up there and speak? What could I possibly have to share that is, it could even come close to what they just shared? And like, who am I to get up and speak after them? And, you know, so I went into that space and I was like, oh, no, no, no. That is just, that's my doubter talking. That's self-doubt talking. And it was like, what you have to say is valuable, Lisa, and exactly what you have to say is exactly what you're doing to yourself of what you need to help other women understand. So we teach what we learn ourselves. But
that's true.
Yeah.
That is true. So it's we're about 35 minutes into the show, and I want to give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about your website, your book, your programs, you know, the things that you do. So why don't you share some of that with us?
Sure. So my website is, it's easy, it's lisamariejenkins.com. And my book is available. You can get a personalized signed copy from me if you want to order from my website. And my book is available at Barnes & Noble, at Amazon, or any of your favorite independent book resellers. And I primarily focus on three core areas. So I do one-on-one coaching. I also do, this is my core offering, and what I love is the Women's Leadership Forum. So it's a program where women come together in a group of about 12, and they basically sign up for a year, and we meet monthly for a good half a day. And it's not, I wouldn't bring a group of women together from the same company because they're going to have difficulty maybe sharing because of political reasons and so forth. But it can be divided by women, whether they're women entrepreneurs, women middle managers in corporations, or women executives wanting to move more into board roles and things like that. So bringing together, you know, a commonality of what they're doing in the world, in the business world, so to speak. And then it's awesome because it's professionally facilitated. And it's all about them. And we learn so much more through peer interaction and peer reflection and inquiry from one another. Because thank God we're moving out of that authoritative expert type of learning. We learn more from experience and identifying with other people's stories. And then anything that offers ability of reflection so we can do self-inquiry within ourselves to figure
out. Where are you located, Lisa?
So I'm located in Tampa, Florida. Tampa.
You're in Tampa, okay. And you do, and these groups that you do on site, or you do virtual media?
We're gonna this fall. I'm working with another woman. She does basically the same thing I do. Her name is Mary Key, and she's been doing this for years, mostly focused on CEO forums, but she's moving into wanting to specialize in women as well, and she's fabulous. So. Building out here in Tampa, but my next step is to really build them out two ways. I want to move into the Silicon Valley area because there's such a huge push there, but also virtual. That way nobody's limited based on their geography, and people can come together on a video web conference for a couple hours every month, and it'll be less expensive, and it also makes it more accessible. So this fall we're going to be building out a virtual women's leadership forum. And then I also do presentation training. So I love to bring a group of 10 to 12 people together, and it's a 2 full-day in-house training, which can be done at any organization.
That's great. Oh, so you'll come into organizations and
help
them.
That's really designed not for me to pull a group together from a geography, but for me to go in an organization that has customer-facing, or it doesn't even have to be customer-facing. Maybe they want people to be better at driving results and driving action in their meetings and feeling more comfortable in presenting and being able to really deliver powerful, impactful contact that allows people to really connect. And that's my main theme. And if I had to say what I'm known for, I want to be known for, is that I'm taking the hard skills of more just traditional business acumen that people are taught, and I'm bridging that to mindfulness and personal development. Because we have to address the whole person, and that's what's been missing in business, is we address the intellect and we help, we train on the hard skills, meaning business acumen or technical training, but we forget to address the whole person. And that's mindfulness and personal development and happiness and helping, you know, personal growth involved in that. And so I like to look at it as that's what I do, is I create a bridge so we're addressing the whole person, mind, body, and spirit.
I think that's wonderful. I mean, I don't know that I've ever talked to anyone who was incorporating both worlds together. I talk to people who are highly spiritual and highly progressive, but I've never heard it combined with the business world. And you're right. That would change our that would change our businesses. That would change our government. That would change everything for us.
Everything,
so you
right.
are a groundbreaker, Lisa.
I'm one of many groundbreakers. I think we're finally all getting to see that. But, you know, that was, for me, when I really healed that piece of I'm good enough without a man. Like, I'm whole and passionate and complete with or without a man. He's just, he's a preference. He's my cherry on top kind of thing. When I got to that place, and it was, Randy, it was like a brick hit me over the head. It was like, oh, my God, that's why I'm here. That's why I spent over 20 years in corporate America, so that I could take all of this deep spiritual side of me and I could start incorporating it and work with women that I get and I understand in environments that are so toxic because of all the things we've been talking about, right?
That's
and
right.
Women haven't felt they could have. I saw so many women, in my last 3 years at Cisco, I was actually in internal global roles. So I started working with way more women because there's more women in marketing roles. And what I realize is most women do one of two things. Either they say, well, to be successful, I've got to do it like a guy. And so they literally try and do it in a very masculine way that's not authentic to them. And it doesn't come off well. You know, they do that. That's one of the reasons they get labeled a bitch and aggressive. And they're not, their heart's not in it. Or I just saw women just, it was too, they thought that the only way they could do it was to do it like a man. So they just kind of became submissive and stepped back and just put head down and worked really hard.
Yeah. Well, I could talk to you about this all day long because I can relate to so many of these things and I can benefit from so much of what you're saying. So I think that's great. But we're running out of time. So I am going to have to say goodbye. But first I want to tell you how much I thank you for coming on the show and sharing this. You know, this is just so important for women to hear. And I thank you for the work that you're doing. This is just amazing. Yes, we can change the world, can't we?
We can't. It's time for the brilliant women to stop hiding, right? Stop making excuses why they're not taking action in the world with their own passion and where they can contribute.
It is. I feel so empowered. After talking to you, I'm like, okay, I'm ready to take on the world. I think that's great. You're obviously good at what you do.
I just want to leave with this. It's way more than about, it's about your individual opportunity to come out and find your passion and find your power in the world. But it's also a responsibility of the Western woman because we've got to lead that way. We've got to lead this. This is about evolution of our species because we're going to self-destruct here soon if we don't shift and create this balance.
I agree. Love it.
So we have work to do.
Okay, so Lisa's book is called Wake Up Beauty. It's not about the prince. Her name is Lisa Marie Jenkins. And thank you again, Lisa.
Thank you, Randy.
I hope that we'll
pleasure.
Be in touch. Sounds
okay.
great.
Awesome. Okay.
Thanks.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So we are out of time for today. But if you have any comments or questions about today's show or any other shows, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com. It's RANDIGFINE.com. And my website, randygfine.com. Stop by and sign the guest book and read my articles. I have articles that will appeal to pretty much everything you're trying to work on or everything you need inspiration about. So check that out. And also on my site, you can find other things like links to all my shows, and it's a great resource. If you enjoy listening to my shows, please become a show follower. At the top of every show page is a button that allows you to follow me. And then when you follow me, you get advised of all my new programming. And the more followers I have, the better the program is that I can bring to you. And I have amazing programs coming. So you don't want to miss out on that. I just have, just like the show, I have the very, very best of the best that come on my show, and I'm so grateful to be able to offer that to you. So please become a show follower. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host Randy Fine, signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, Randy G. Fine, RANDIGFINE.com,